Hello again. You're listening to the News at One. We're joined here in studio by Tánaiste and Minister for Foreign Affairs and Defence, Micheál Martin. A very good afternoon to you, Tánaiste, and welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon, Brian.
Now, you're announcing details today of a public consultation on security policy. There'll be a series of events taking place in Cork, Galway and in Dublin over the next month or so. What is the purpose of this exercise and what's planned in terms of, if you like, taking the public pulse?
Well, in the first instance, the purpose of this is to have a national conversation, the first ever really national consultative forum on international security policy and foreign policy. And it'll take place in Cork, Galway and Dublin from the 22nd of June onwards. And we'll be looking at the range of new challenges coming on stream, cybersecurity challenge, the challenge around subsea cables, maritime security, hybrid threats, disinformation, and so on. And also then examining Ireland's participation in common security and defence policy, European Union common security and defence policy, which we've been part of for quite a long time, but perhaps about which there's an underappreciation of. And then we're partners for peace with NATO since 1999. We want that discussed, discuss PESCO, discuss the broad range of issues in an open, transparent way. The public can register, as in from today, to participate, both in attendance physically and also online, obviously. Mm-hmm. People are encouraged to make submissions as well. There'll be an independent chairperson, Louise Richardson, former Chancellor of Oxford.
Is neutrality up for debate, up for discussion and possibly up for change?
Well, consultative forum isn't just about a binary choice between military neutrality or not, but it will be discussed. It will be discussed at the consultative forum. But the government have no plans to change our policy of military neutrality, which essentially is we're not members of NATO or we're not members of a mutual defence pact. But there's a wide range of other issues we do need to discuss. Mm. Some I've mentioned.
Yeah,
we need to assess Ireland's international role, lessons learned from our participation in the Security Council of the United Nations for the last 2 years, the rules-based international order, which
and
has been...
And you talked about this being an open, inclusive, consultative process.
Mm-hmm.
You've also said separately that you believe there's an emerging consensus that we need to change the triple lock. This is the arrangement whereby there has to be government, Dáil and UN sanction for any deployment of Irish troops, Irish forces overseas. So has this been set up, if you like, as a process with, to some extent, a predetermined outcome?
No, I mean, there are no predetermined outcomes in respect of this particular consultative forum. On the wider issue of the triple lock, because of the behaviour of Russia in more recent years on the Security Council, and particularly given that Russia has violated the UN Charter through its invasion of Ukraine and its attack on Ukraine, and its use of the veto to stop peacekeeping missions, there is a question that we have to examine, and we will examine it during this forum.
Should it go, do you think?
Well, I'm of a view that it's certainly something we need to consider. We would have to amend the Defence Acts to do that, to have it for the Dáil and government to decide on whether or not we participate in peacekeeping missions into the future. But Russia cannot have a veto on Ireland participating in peacekeeping missions into the future.
Are we not, though, in those remarks and perhaps in other developments as well, seeing ourselves being drawn bit by bit into closer military alignments, particularly with the EU partners? Just yesterday, the Cabinet approved participation by Ireland in the European Defence Agency. Now, is that consistent with military neutrality?
Yes. I mean, we've been involved with the Defence Agency common procurement for a long, long time now.
But this could include the procurement, for example, of ammunition which might be sent to Ukraine.
Well, no, we will not be procuring ammunition that will be sent to Ukraine. Our support for Ukraine is non-lethal. There's about four projects here. One is in the area of body armour, for example, and helmets and so on. Common procurement basically means two things. We can get better value for money because our army does need ammunition. Our army and the Navy and Defence Forces will need equipment. They will need body armour. They will need also to be part of computer programmes as well in terms of security. And the second thing is interoperability. So we're in Lebanon at the moment with Polish troops. It makes sense that the other countries that we share peacekeeping missions with, that we have interoperability. In other words, that we have similar equipment, similar operational sort of equipment and so on like that to enable us to perform seamlessly in peacekeeping environments such as Lebanon, Africa and elsewhere.
No doubt in due course as part of this consultative process, all of that and more besides will be discussed.
But that's why we want, by the way, you've asked the question quite correctly. That's exactly why we're having this debate, because I think more people need need to be aware of what actually has been going on for the last 20 odd years, how involved we are with European common security and defence policy, and there are issues. Like the fundamental point I would make, we can never again be on our own. Isolationism is not an option here. We must cooperate with, coordinate in terms of issues like cybersecurity, maritime security, protecting subsea cables and so on, which are vital to our economic well-being.
That will get fuller consideration as a result of this process. If I can move on to another issue, and it concerns comments today to the Oireachtas Health Committee by the chair of the Review into Abortion Services, Barrister Mary O'Shea. Now, as you know, she produced a report in recent weeks. It recommended a series of operational and legislative changes as well to our abortion law. And she's been making the point to the committee today that the electorate back in 2018, when people voted in favour of repeal, could not have foreseen the difficulties that would arise in the operation of the Act. Now, do you accept that basic contention?
Well, I think this will be examined by the Oireachtas Committee on Health, and the government has referred this report. When we appreciate the work that Dr. Mary O'Shea has put into this work, or Mary O'Shea has put into this work and report. And certainly there may very well have been issues that people could not foresee in terms of the actual operational of the operation of the legislation. So there are two aspects to this report. One is operational recommendations, which will immediately go to the Health Service Executive for to work and implement those recommendations. And secondly, the legislative changes that are recommended,
which
here
are quite significant. And then, for example, to the 3-day wait period, decriminalising medical professionals who are involved in delivering abortion services, in some cases extending the time limit on terminations taking place, a better balance between the rights of people to conscientiously object and the rights of somebody to being treated. Are those the kind of changes that you would be inclined to favour?
Well, I give consideration to them. I think what we are saying right now, just as the Oireachtas Committee did do the deliberation in a balanced and constructive way that led to change, if you like, that led to the referendum on the Eighth Amendment and the repeal of it. Likewise, I think it makes sense that over the next 12 months, the Oireachtas Committee would examine all of these legislative recommendations with a view to endeavouring to reach a consensus towards some legislative change, if that's what is recommended.
She did make an interesting remark. She talked about to the committee that courage and leadership are needed from government leaders on the issue. Now, you, I think, went against your own parliamentary party in coming out in favour of repeal back in 2019. Would you give a lead? Would you be willing to give a lead on this occasion on these changes?
Yeah, I mean, but courage and leadership was given prior to the amendment and the repeal of the amendment. But I do believe in the need for deliberation on these issues, the need for these recommendations to be considered by the Oireachtas Committee in some detail, and that there will be, people will have views on this and people will want to go before the committee and give their perspectives on it. And certainly I will give it very serious consideration as an individual member of the Oireachtas. But I do think, just like we did before the repeal of the 8th, I think that deliberation by the committee, the public sessions, all of that led actually to a calmer and more constructive debate on these issues prior to the referendum and during the referendum than might have been the case 10 or 15 years ago. So I think likewise now, we should have a similar type of process in respect of the recommendations that have come forward from Maria O'Shea's and her report.
Just a couple of other issues while you're with us there, Tánaiste. So from midnight tonight, the price of petrol and diesel at the pumps will go up because the excise cuts that were brought in last year as a cost of living measure will be begun to be unwound. Yeah. That'll mean an extra 6 cents on a litre of petrol, 5 cents on a litre of diesel. We know that inflation is still high. We have the latest figures today. We know families are still struggling to pay grocery and other household bills. If these cuts in excise duties were justified a year ago in the face of the cost of living crisis, why are they not justified now?
Well, the situation is we've extended those cuts on two occasions already, and this is the first phase of the phasing out of those cuts that we brought at the height of the cuts. The overall prices around diesel and petrol have come down somewhat over the last 12 months. But I think we do need to move into a different phase of dealing with cost of living issues. And we do acknowledge that there are still cost of living issues. And indeed, some of our measures will still be there in respect of child benefit, for example, in respect of education costs, and where we'll be reducing them significantly such as the removal of the provision of free primary books.
Yeah, and no, so I understand that. But these are the increase in these excise duties, and there's two more to come before the year's out, fall particularly heavily on people who don't have an alternative but to use their car. Very often people living in rural Ireland where there isn't public transport available. So it's a very unfair measure, isn't it?
It's not an unfair measure in the sense that the measure was an exceptional measure that was brought in to deal with a very exceptional situation in terms of inflation and
which
in terms
is still
of
with us.
Which is with us, but is in decline. Inflation is coming down.
Well, core inflation today is up.
Well, no, inflation is coming down overall. We had a presentation just this week from the Department of Finance, and it's projected to go down. And I actually think we need to allocate resources, as we've been doing consistently, to reduce the cost of public services in education and in health and in childcare, which matters to families in particular. And I think it is about how we prioritise our supports for people in the context of this cost of living situation, which is brought about by the war in Ukraine and the broader issue of coming back after COVID and the supply chain disruptions. So there are issues there, we don't doubt that, but I don't think we can keep the level of supports in terms of the cuts to the excise duty. That could not be extended forever. It was never intended that there would be on an ongoing basis. So I do think in the preparation for this year's budget after the summer recess, we do need to be identifying where should we target, where should we prioritise our resources most effectively.
It seems some of your Fine Gael colleagues have already made up their mind on some of that. €1,000 tax cut to middle income earners at a cost of, the figure seems to vary, but well north of €1 billion.
Well, again, we had a good meeting on Monday evening, three party leaders and indeed Minister of Finance and Public Expenditure. So there's a very clear process now in terms of the summer economic statement, which will come in a couple of weeks. We will engage with the social partners through the National Economic Dialogue. And I think there will be a taxation package and there'll be a public expenditure package.
You're not expecting to see any further pre-budget lobbying by junior ministers?
I think we've agreed a clear process here as to how to do this. We did it well last year in terms of the package that we brought forward.
Has Fine Gael, has Taoiseach agreed to engage in any further exchanges here privately behind closed doors?
No, sorry, I talked about the methodology that we've agreed with, which we did last year. We're going to do it this year in terms of the summer economic statement. I think that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some distance yet to go to the budget. But, I mean, you saw the unemployment figures today. I mean, a record low, below 4%, now 3.7%. The economy is doing very well. We will have surpluses, but we've got to make sure that we don't add to the inflationary cycle either. And this is a tight balance for us.
By excise duty increases, for example, but we've dealt with that. No, but
But inflation is projected to come down to 2-3% next year. So that's the context we have to operate within.
All right.
And the most important thing is to try and do that overall across the economy.
Right. Just a very final question. There's been talk from the chief executive of the Dublin Airport Authority for reopening, re-establishing the Dublin Cork air route. Now that's a journey you make on a regular basis. Would you be in favour of that? I mean, I mean you travel backwards and forwards between Dublin and Cork. Would you like to see an air connection re-established?
Well, again, I mean, there's two issues to that. There's the sustainability question in terms of that, both in terms of the economic sustainability of the route, because what has happened is the improvement in the train journeys and the motorway, and the combination of the two, I think, took a lot
of... But the environmental sustainability is there as well. Is there really an argument about that, do you think?
Oh, there is an argument about that. That would be a consideration.
Yeah. I know it's the French, for example, have banned all internal flights where there's less than 2 hours or 2.5 hours.
Yeah, but in Ireland, the one area I'd have concerns about would be the Northwest, because I do think we need to improve connectivity to the Northwest, because they have challenges with the A5 on road. They don't have the same rail connectivity and they don't have air connectivity. So I think we just don't French are doing, because there's different issues in Ireland in terms of regional connectivity.
Dublin Cork
has good connectivity through the trains.
No need for
I'm not saying no need. If people can put forward an economic and environmental argument for it, we'll see. But we had it before and it just didn't prove competitive with the train and the road.
All right. We'll leave it there. Tánaiste Micheál Martin, thank you very much indeed for being with us on the programme.